You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We're going to shift gears here for the second half of the show, from talking about what we've done to nature to talking about what nature does and can do to and for us. My next guest is Florence Williams. She's author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. Florence, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Heather. Great to be here.
All right. So what is it that nature is fixing? We've heard about this phrase nature deficit disorder in the past couple of years. That's a real thing?
I think it's a real thing. I first experienced it really when I moved from where I had been living in the Rocky Mountains for two decades to my new home of Washington, D.C., and I immediately kind of freaked out. The noise pollution, the traffic, the sort of Euclidean urban geometry, it certainly made my brain really kind of anxious. And so I started wondering, what is the science behind nature deficit disorder, and is it real? And so I went on this journey sort of all over the world, really, to talk to researchers, find out what the latest science had to say about it. And there is this really growing body of evidence that, you know, our environments have a huge impact on our emotions and our psychology and our health in so many ways, even our physical health, sort of our immune system, our immune cells, our cytokines, our inflammation markers. I just kept learning so much. And it did make me kind of even more regretful to have left the Rocky Mountains. And now I'm trying to figure out how to find nature in the city, which is really where most of us live.
I'm going to ask you definitely about how to find nature in a city in a little bit. But I'm also curious. I think this is kind of a deep-seated idea that we've always had and known that nature's important to us, that we like being outside. We feel relaxed when we're outside. But it hasn't been something that scientists have studied really rigorously until recently. Did you get from any of those many scientists that you went and talked to, kind of how did they get interested in it, and how did they get started trying to really question this in a scientific way?
Yeah, most of the researchers I met were like me, you know, kind of interested in kind of a personal pursuit of this. You know, they had experienced it in their own lives. For example, I spent some time with a neurocognitive psychologist in Utah, and he's a backpacker. And he noticed that every time he left his office and left his phone and went backpacking for 3 or 4 days, he got all these great ideas and felt like he was more creative. And, you know, the neuroscientist in him was like, well, how do I study it? And so I think, you know, scientists like numbers, they like data. And they understand, too, that we live in this really evidence-based society where if we believe in these ideas and we want them to be taken seriously, this is the time to sort of show institutions, show the medical establishment, show our schools and our neighborhoods that this stuff is real.
I'm talking with Florence Williams. She's the author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. So how do you do an experiment to see if nature makes people happier, or how do scientists go about getting the data they need to end up with these conclusions?
Well, that particular cognitive neuroscientist I mentioned, his name is Dr. David Strayer, the University of Utah, and he started out doing sort of paper and pencil tests where he would give cognitive tests to backpackers before and after their trip. And what he noticed was that there was a 50% increase in creativity, measures of creativity after their trip.
50%.
And so that's huge.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't like 50% improvement in creativity, right? But then he started wondering, well, can you actually see biomarkers in the brain? And so now he's actually scanning people's brains. He's putting them into like portable EEG caps, which measures electroencephalography, which measures brain waves. And what he's finding is that our frontal lobes, which is the part of our brain that sort of governs our attentional networks. And those are the parts of our brains that are really overtaxed, kind of in normal urban, you know, office life. We're constantly like checking off our to-do lists and responding to emails and solving problems and not really, you know, finding sort of restoration and calm, which is something nature provides. So what he's found is that when we're out in nature, that part of our brain sort of quiets down. And in fact, you get more alpha waves in your frontal lobes, which is kind of cool. It's a measure of sort of a calm, alert state. It's really a prized state, you know, from poets to Buddhists to surfers. Everyone wants alpha waves. And it turns out you can actually get them if you're walking in a quiet place in nature. So when you're out there for days at a time, it kind of makes sense that, you know, your brain is like a muscle. And if you can actually rest parts of it, when you go back online, you come back stronger.
Okay, but days at a time is not something that all of us have on a regular basis to go on a nature retreat. Does it take days at a time? I mean, I hear the nature fix and immediately my mind goes, ooh, the quick fix, right? It sounds like,
right.
Can we get a quick fix
yes.
of nature and actually get a result from it?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. So yeah, I mean, one thing I really learned is that, you know, the benefits of nature kind of exist on a dose curve. And so, yeah, if you can get 3 days in nature, it's really great. It's really great for your cognition. It's great for your emotional state. But yeah, even 15 minutes of walking in a forest, according to researchers in Japan, who I spend time with, you know, can actually reduce your blood pressure, reduce your sort of cortisol stress hormones, change your heart rate variability in a way that makes you kind of more resilient to stress. And this is after just 15 minutes. There are some other researchers looking at, for example, the power of awe or what seeing incredible beauty can do for us. And even after 1 minute of gazing up at a tall, beautiful stand of, you know, trees, people behave in ways that are more generous and more pro-social and more community-minded. So I think we've probably all, you know, experienced this where we see an incredible sunset or we see, you know, some amazing wildlife, you know, walking by. And it really does connect us to the people around us. It makes us feel like we're part of something larger. And when that happens, we actually become nicer to each other, which seems kind of logical.
That sense of awe is something that I think kids come to naturally, even with, you know, teeny tiny things. Mom, there's a bug in the crack in the sidewalk, whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, what do we know about kids and nature and their psyches and how it affects them lifelong?
I think kids really have a lot to teach the rest of us because their sense of wonder is still intact. They have an amazing ability to find awe, you know, in the crack in the sidewalk. It's before they become jaded. And I think it reminds us that we really are built to have a natural affinity for living things. You know, E.O. Wilson at Harvard calls this biophilia. And kids remind us that we do love. We love the wild and we love nature. But we forget that. We forget it as we become busy and distracted and more jaded in our lives. But yeah, I mean, when kids are allowed to really cultivate this natural affinity, then they really connect to natural landscapes and to nature in a way that will last them their entire lives. And that's one of the things I feel so passionate about now is that we really need to enable that connection because so many young people today don't spend enough time outside. There's so many distractions indoors. You know, their parents are often uncomfortable with letting kids run around on their own outside. They don't have as much free play or exploration, you know, as we did as kids or as our parents did. There's been this really profound shift in the way we interact with the natural world in the last, you know, 50 years. And I think it's really gone very little remarked upon.
I'm talking with Florence Williams. She's the author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. You were, you know, started off by talking about how you lived in you know, the mountains and were this very active, outdoorsy type of person. Talk about the mappiness project. I mean, this is an app where you get kind of randomly pinged to say, where are you and how happy are you? And you figured out that, in fact, you weren't spending nearly as much time outside as you thought. And that's probably the case for most people.
Right. Well, this was after I moved to Washington, D.C. I started using the Mappiness app. This was created by an economist in the U.K., in England. And he has something like 10,000 people who use this app. So he has now actually millions of data points, which is kind of fascinating. And what he's doing is he's measuring sort of real-time happiness. So where this app pings you twice a day. It asks you where you are. Are you indoors? Are you outdoors? You can actually take a picture of where you are. And then his, you know, his lab will correlate that to green space on GPS mapping, so they will actually be able to find out exactly how much green space is around you. You say how happy you are and what you're doing. And then you can actually see your own data and you can compare it to everyone else's. And it was kind of disillusioning for me because it showed me that in fact, I was not outside very often at all. I was often doing things like work and childcare, you know, and things that don't necessarily rank very, very high on the happiness level.
And of course, we're sitting right now in a windowless radio studio talking wonderfully about the outdoors.
But we're getting great quality sound, so that's important. Yeah, so it was really revealing. And in fact, most Americans spend less than 95% of their time. They spend over 95% of their time inside. So 5% of our time outside, and often that's not in quality outside spaces. That's like getting your mail or waiting for the bus, you know, or crossing an urban neighborhood. So our lives are very, very different from what they were even a generation ago.
And that gets us back to where we started with how do you find nature in our increasingly urban world? And I mean, it's only going to become more urban. There are plenty of, you know, environmental activists even who would say urbanization is the future. It's the way we're going to limit, ironically, our environmental footprint and make more space for nature. But how do you live in that city and find nature?
Right. How do you still be a human in those spaces? I think that's actually going to be a major question of the 21st century around the world. So in 2008, we hit this interesting threshold, sort of this Rubicon of habitat, which is that now more people live in urban areas around the world than don't live in urban areas. And in the United States, that figure is 70%. Globally, it will be 70% by 2050. So it's going to be a huge challenge to figure out how to provide access to nature where most of us actually live. It's a social justice issue because, as we all know, some people have more access to nice neighborhoods, nice leafy neighborhoods and summer camps and vacation homes and golf courses than others.
Is that enough, though? I mean, it only takes 15 minutes, right? It doesn't have to be a multi-day retreat, but is a nice tree enough, or does it need to be a forest that surrounds you?
Well, I like to think of nature as, you know, existing on this dose curve. So the more nature immersion you can get, the better. One researcher describes this sort of access to nature kind of paradigm as like a food pyramid. So you can have sort of a nature pyramid, and you really need all tiers of that pyramid. So the bottom level can be sort of nearby nature. It can be the view out your window. It can be your neighborhood green space. And that's critically important because that's where we are, you know, most of the time. We're in those neighborhoods or we're in our workspaces. But we also need more intentional visits to more naturalistic areas, you know, to local parks that are bigger, to state parks. And then at the very top of the pyramid, you know, these kind of wonderful wilderness immersions that maybe we'll only get once a year. Some of us may only get, you know, a couple of times in a lifetime. But those nature experiences are actually really critical for especially times in our life when we may be really dealing with grief or with trauma or trying to figure out who we are, self-concept. You know, cultures for millennia have really valued time in the wilderness as kind of an integral part of a rite of passage. You know, for kids who are becoming adults, I mean, there are just times in our lives when, yes, we need the wilderness.
Scientists are getting to a pretty granular level in terms of, you know, the biological effects of nature on us. It affects cortisol, this stress hormone, or it affects alpha waves. Do we have any understanding of what it is in nature that does that? Is it the air quality? Is it scent chemicals? Is it sounds? Is it something that we could maybe synthesize or replicate in some way to kind of treat ourselves with a dose of nature, even if we're right in the middle of a city?
Great question. Of course, there are people who would love to be able to simulate the effects of nature through virtual reality, you know, or through a great nature video. You might be able to get some positive benefits from that kind of technology, but no. We have not really figured out sort of what the magic ingredient is as to why nature makes us feel so much better. Certainly, I kind of cracked up because so many individual scientists, you know, kind of they like to push their particular field. So, you know, the physicist is like, oh, it's all about the fractal patterns, you know, in the trees or the waves. A lot of the other psychologists are like, no, it's really about the color green. That's what it is. That's the magic bullet. It's the color green. Other people are like, oh, no, it's really all about, you know, the tree aerosols. And, you know, air pollution, the fact that you're just out of a city that's polluted is what makes you feel better. And I really came to believe that the poets kind of had it more correct, which is that there's really a holistic relationship we have through all of our senses when we're in nature. And it may be that, exactly that, that it's a full sensory experience that is really what makes our nervous systems and our brains happy. Because if you think about it, our perceptual systems evolved in natural environments. They evolved to take in information from natural landscapes. not just how they look, but also, you know, how they sound and how they feel. And so when we're using all of our senses, that really seems to be kind of the magic formula to feeling restored in nature.
That's Florence Williams. She's the author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. Florence, thanks so much.
Thank you, Heather. It's been fun.
Up next, some concrete examples, literally, of how nature has inspired creative solutions to some of our most pressing challenges.
This is like the coral reef. You can imagine now having buildings that geologically sequester carbon dioxide.
Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.